Brother Wood, in James 5 and 13, he says, if any be merry, let him sing songs. Now, to sing songs means that he's having the member of the company with his singing. Then you could not obey this passage unless you were aware there was an instrument. If a man got happy all about to himself, he was merry, he'd have to wait to rejoice and ask to be happy until he could get what the instrument was.
Now, Brother Nichols, don't you think a fellow could carry a French harp with him? But here would be my problem. I couldn't play the French harp if I had it with me.
He couldn't sing and play the harp.
No, he couldn't. That's right. All right. Well, that's... Do we have anything else on that particular aspect?
Yes, sir.
Say just a little bit.
Yes, sir.
On sing and make melody.
Well, of course now, it's possible for a person to sing, as Conybeare and Howson point out. It was Paul's intention there in that passage to emphasize the fact that it was the responsibility of the Christians not only to sing, but to do more than that. There were those who sang the voluptuous songs. In fact, he uses that term, or one that suggests much the same idea, in that particular day in Colossae. But he wanted to sing in the fashion of making melody in their heart. In other words, their singing was to be heart participating. And this idea of make melody in the heart, that conveys that heart participation beyond the mere uttering of a song, at least such is my view. All right, there was somebody else that wanted to.
Did the Jews ever use that music in their actual worship, or was it ever authorized?
I don't believe it ever was. Now, I know I get a rise out of some of my liberal brethren on that. But I don't believe that the Lord ever authorized instrumental music in the sense of sanctioning it in the worship of God. I don't believe it. Now, let me tell you why I don't. For 400 years after the law was given on Sinai, the strains of mechanical music were never heard in Israel. When it was introduced by David, who took full credit for it. In 1 Chronicles 23 and 5, he said, "The instruments which I made," said David, "to worship God therewith." And in the Chronicles, again and again, this contrast is drawn. The instruments of David and the song of the Lord. The song of the Lord and the instruments of David. Now you might say, well, it's commanded in the Psalms. Indeed so. After it was introduced, the Lord tolerated it, just as after the kingdom was established, the Lord not only tolerated it when he was not willing for it to be established as it was, he opposed it. When Samuel approached him and said, "They've rejected me," God said to him, "They haven't rejected you. They've rejected me, that I should not reign over them." But then nonetheless, he named their kings and governed the kingdom. But there were many matters along that line. There's case after case in the Old Testament where the Lord accepted a situation and tolerated it for the time. I don't believe he ever intended for such to be. All right. Yes, he does. I know there are those that explain that away. Woe unto them that invent unto themselves instruments of music like David. There are those that say, well, but also he forbade the reclining on ivory couches and eating calves in the stall, all of which is so. That's all very true. But he also said, "Woe unto them that invent unto themselves instruments of music like David." Now, is that a meaningless statement? What did David do? He introduced it in the worship of God. What did the prophet do? Pronounced a woe upon him for. To me, that just simply shows that the Lord never tolerated it. That he has never sanctioned it, though he tolerated it, all right?
Brother Wood, I think it would be good if you tell the people here that your track is back in front of you.
All right, that's a commercial. Brother, Brother Cecil Shelton, who is the preacher for the church in Waynesville, Missouri, and a longtime friend of mine, some time back asked if it'd be all right with me if he had reprinted a sermon I preached many years ago on why the churches of Christ do not use mechanical instruments of music in worship. I told him he could, and he did. And so you can see him about it if you're interested. All right. Yes.
Some of the younger brethren, I think I'll be more liberal, say that follow in Ephesians 5:19 doesn't require an instrument, but it does forbid. And they will not accept the parallel of Noah's Ark made out of gopher wood.
Well, they can't have their cake and eat it too. It either authorizes it or it doesn't. If it authorizes it, then you can't discharge the duty of the command without using the mechanical instrument. If you can discharge it, then it is not in it. And therefore, since it's not in it, it doesn't command it. And if it doesn't command it, then there's no authority for it in that passage. Well, it's a parallel for this reason. When the Lord gives a command, that excludes the doing of that thing in any other way except by means of that command. In other words, a command to do a thing, when it's a specific command, eliminates the doing of anything else aside from it. When the Lord commanded gopher wood, that eliminated hickory. Yet he never specified anywhere not to use it. Well, that is so obvious that I don't see how any thoughtful person could question it. All right? Well, all right. Yes, sir. Correct interpretation of that is that these men were set in the house by the commandment of the Lord. Let me refer you to who was undoubtedly the most, the ablest and most capable Hebrew scholar of his century in England. When he was 21 years of age, he was regarded as the ripest Hebrew scholar in all of England, Adam Clark. Look it up someday. Well, all right then, if you don't agree with it, then take it up with Mr. Clark, because I accept his view.
He's still dead.
Yes, sir. Yes, so that'll increase your difficulty somewhat. All right, sir. I haven't got time this afternoon to discuss it. Maybe tomorrow afternoon. All right. I got too many questions ahead of you. All right.
Well, I was wondering, you mentioned that God tolerated instrumental music without any divine command under the Old Testament. What reason, then, could you exclude it from being tolerated under the New Testament?
Simply because the new law is a much more severe and certainly sets out more vividly the Lord's will today. Let's take another example. Moses allowed divorce for every cause. What about your reasoning applied to it?
Well, because it is restated by Christ that it is wrong.
Well, the same...
This is changed.
The same...
There is no comment on the instrument.
The same principle would apply. The very fact that the Lord tolerated a thing in the Old Testament doesn't mean that under a new order that the thing has been reinstated within, in the absence of any command. Where is the command to use such here? Brother Dixon, go ahead.
Right.
Yes, sir. I think that's right. And furthermore, as Brother Dixon has pointed out, it not being in the synagogue, and since the synagogue more nearly was duplicated in the church than the temple was, then there's significance in the fact that it was omitted from the church. All right? Yes, sir.
In the usual instance, they were never brought into the holy place, which was the type and is the type of our worship.
Yes, that's right. Now, here is a question I want us to deal with briefly. Were the commandments of God, which were given prior to the law of Moses, nailed to the cross? Well, now, remember this, that the sacrificial system of worship that was characteristic of the order before was incorporated into the Mosaic order and therefore became a part of it. Now, there were parts of law, of the law, that is, of the patriarchal law, the moral law of God, that was not, that did not originate with the Ten Commandments and therefore did not die with the annulment of the law. All of the moral commandments are still applicable, but they're applicable not because they were part of the law of Moses, but because they existed before the law and they've existed since. In other words, it is just as wrong to kill, to steal, to lie before Sinai as it was after. And so we're not to identify those laws with the law of Moses. But that which was peculiar to the law terminated at the cross. The Lord took it out of the way and nailed it to the cross. Now, as you know, the Adventists claim that the Ten Commandment law, the Decalogue, is an eternal law of God, every portion of it, and that it constitutes a perfect moral code. I was debating a fellow in an Oklahoma town some years ago who was a professor from one of the Adventist colleges, and his main argument was that the Ten Commandment law is a perfect moral code, having in it all that's necessitated for the individual to live by. I answered that it's anything but a perfect moral code. It is a very imperfect, and I proceeded to demonstrate. It says, for example, thou shalt not kill. Well, but what about beating a fellow half to death? What part of it would you violate? It says, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. What about lying for him? Now, I pointed out that there are other parts of the law of Moses that forbid that, of course. But that's the part he said was done away with. And so it's anything but a perfect moral code, all right?
But what reason God did then, if the music?
That's exactly right. As a matter of fact, it's amazing how people go about trying to justify it. They say they had it back down under the law. They say it'll be over yon in heaven. Now, if that were right, all that would prove is that if they had it back under the law, and it'll be over yon in heaven. That's all that would prove. That's far from establishing the premise that it's right here and now. But I've heard it said all my life, it'll be instruments of music in heaven. I just don't know how they found that out, unless there's somebody been up there and come back like Mrs. White did. Because the Bible doesn't say there'll be instruments of music in heaven. Somebody might say over there in the 14th chapter of Revelation, doesn't it say that John heard harps? Now, reading from the American Standard Translation, he said, I heard the voice as of many waters. I heard voices as of a great thunder. And the voices which I heard were as harpers harping on their harps. Now watch. He heard voices as of a great thunder. Did he hear a great thunder? No. What did he hear? Heard voices. What did the voices sound like? Sounded like a great thunder. Well, was it voices or thunder? It was voices. He heard voices as of many waters. Did he hear many waters? No. What did he hear? Heard voices. What did the voices sound like? Many waters. But what did he hear? Voices or waters? Voices. And the voices which I heard were as harpers harping on their harps. Did he hear harpers harping on their harps? No. What did he hear? Heard voices. What did they sound like? Harpers harping on their harps. You just read one more verse, you got it. Look at the third verse. And they sing, as it were, a new song. Doing what? Singing. Yeah, it also mentions carrying the prayers around in bowls. Yes, sir, it sure does. But then I mentioned that to show it's a figurative statement and not a literal one. Yes. Oh. Thank you, Brother Nichols. That's quite a compliment.
I forgot about an argument that we made concerning that. It's called Brother Woodruff. Brother Bowles pointed out that in Luke 20 and 34 and 36, Jesus said, "In heaven there neither marry nor are given in marriage." Now, the argument is made that we must have the church like heaven, and that to have instruments in heaven, therefore we should have them in the church and make it as much like heaven as possible. One of those suggestions then that we ought to go all the way and to make the church like heaven, since we don't have marriage up there or giving in marriage, do away with marriage down here.
Well, I'm inclined to think that that would even lessen the desire of some to go to heaven. That reminds of an old brother of whom I read many years ago who took the position that it was unscriptural to remarry under any circumstance, even in the case of the death of one's companion. And he argued it to the disruption of the congregation for many years. But in the process of time, his wife died. And in less than 12 months, he changed his position and remarried. Now, it's my conviction that the brethren ought to have withdrawn from him on general principles. This morning, Brother Nichols mentioned three areas in which God works. Under the second heading, he mentioned the example of the prayer of Elijah. James combines this with the prayer of elders for the sick, James 5, 13-18. Is this open to us today? Please discuss. Well, I don't think it is. Now, I'm sorry I didn't hear Brother Nichols' statement. I believe what Brother Nichols says is correct about this. I'm not raising a question about what he said because he's exactly right. But now, in answer to the question here, please ask him to give his position regarding... Well, wait just a minute here now. I don't believe that that's the... No, I'm reading two questions together here. James combines this with the prayer of elders for the sick. Now, is this open to us today? I don't believe that it is. I believe that James 5 describes a situation, the lack of which we do not have. The reason being that evidently those elders were possessed of miraculous powers, doubtless conveyed through the laying on of apostles' hands, by which they were able to raise up the sick. Now, the prayer of faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up. And if he have committed sins, they shall be forgiven him. That shows it was not spiritual illness. It was physical illness. Years ago, when we were having debates in the open forum, I remember debating some brother on that question. I affirmed, of course, in one of the mock debates, that that gospel preachers might have today the same powers as the apostles. And I made an argument on this passage. I pointed out that this has in it the prayer of faith. It has in it sick people. It has in it the promise of God. It has in it elders. Now, we got sick people today. We got preachers today. We got elders today. We got the passage today. What's lacking today? The prayer of faith. Of course, the fallacy of my argument was I was inserting the very point I should have proved, and that was that the passage is applicable. I don't believe it is. I might tell you that I've turned over to the Old Testament, and I found a passage over there where it said that a certain fellow was diseased in his feet, and he sought not the Lord, but the physicians. And the next verse says, "And he slept with his fathers." And I pointed out, if you want to sleep with your fathers, seek the physicians and not the Lord. Now, that's the type of fallacy of argument that is today sometimes being used. Of course, the passage doesn't promise that the Lord will raise up every sick person today.
Oh,
indeed. Indeed so. That we may and should pray for the sick is certainly true. But remember this. The Lord either heals the sick miraculously or through means. If miraculously, then miracles are available today. If through means, then we should pray that the Lord will use the means that are today available and that they may be used to that purpose. And certainly such is right for us to do. But the time is gone. We'll resume tomorrow afternoon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Wood. And if you can, would you please wait for the announcements? We'll make them as rapidly as possible.